Welcome to Tabletop Tommies. I'm Johnny.
And I'm Phil.
And today we're going to be talking about free units in bolt action. Specifically, we think they're a bit of a problem. And stay tuned for the next insert duration of episode minutes to find out why.
But before we get into that, just a quick shout to say a massive thank you to everybody who started to support us on Patreon. We really do appreciate it.
So, Phil, are free units a problem in bolt action? We see them quite a lot.
We do. I don't think the concept of a free unit is a problem. I think how they are used by the players and specifically how a TO at an event sets their pack up creates the problem.
I actually don't think it's fair to blame the players and TOs. I actually do think they're a problem, and I don't think it's limited to just that. I think it's actually a problem with game design. I think a game system where you purchase units with points, anything where you give people things for free can be problematic, and therefore it's not great game design, in my opinion.
That's a fair point. Yeah, we'll see where this one goes.
Did you want to expand on why do you think it's problematic for tournaments specifically and for certain players, Phil?
So I think the issue I have with how free units are sometimes used is people either not reading clearly, in my view, what it says in the various books as to what you can and can't take, or it's an event which is set up and there's a lack of clarity around, for example, the use of the national characteristics for the Commonwealth units in a British platoon, which some people interpret, I'm not sure personally, some people interpret allow you to take 2-3 units in a generic British reinforced platoon.
It sounds like to me where I think free units aren't good generally.
Mm.
You specifically have a problem with just one example, which is the British with the free Indians and the free Observer. Is that a fair assessment?
I mean, I play Brits, so I don't have a problem with it on the basis of playing against them or it's something I don't have access to. I think it's more what I object to is the noise that you hear about, oh, it's not fair because these people, this nation gets this free unit and this nation gets that free unit. I think where the free units come from is the game designers and the writers of the various books and supplements are trying to represent what those nations were like in this period of history. And for some of them, the national special rules don't include giving free stuff. And for others, they do. Now, if there's a way during the course of this episode to come up with an idea of how you can reflect the national characteristics of those nations in World War II without giving them free stuff, I'll be all for it. But in the current situation where the national characteristics may include for some nations free units, I don't necessarily think it's a problem with the design. I think it's a problem with how it's utilized, interpreted, how people have heard something, and then it almost becomes self-fulfilling when actually, for example, with the British, I'm not actually convinced that the wording in the various books supports what some people think it does support.
So actually, you don't really have a problem with this at all. It's just sometimes it's implemented in a bit of a wonky way where people don't quite follow the rules as you interpret them. Is your only issue with them?
Yeah, or going back to the point about, how pack and events are set up. If a pack or, we've talked previously on episodes about how it's important that when you're starting an event and you're writing a pack, you're clear about what you can and can't take. And also that you think about the implications of the choices that you make with your pack, because any restrictions you put in will shift the constitution and the meta towards a certain way. Now, if you write a very open pack where anything goes and you say generic platoons and you can take, bits and bobs and all that sort of thing, players will build their armies to the pack. And if the pack is loose to the point where it's able to be exploited in such a way that having free units allows you to get even more free stuff, the Schützen squads with the LMGs for the DAC, for example, French being able to take, the inexperienced squad if you buy a sufficient number, plus you get the howitzer. There's ways and means of really getting a lot of free points worth of stuff into your army. And I think that is, the players aren't at fault. The players building the army to what the pack tells you. Maybe the TOs need to look at what the pack they're putting out is shifting people towards.
So I think that opinion is probably unfair to TOs in a way because, and it's a common opinion that We've said that numerous times that TOs really need to be very restrictive and sort of take control of what's happening at the tournaments. But at the same time, that's sort of shifting the blame from the source of the problem, which is the rules, in my opinion. Because if those rules didn't exist, then there would be no way for people to use them in such a way that seems unfair. And so I think it highlights actually the deeper underlying problem. And I think free units can potentially be a problem, not just a tournament play as well. I think there can be a problem regardless how you're playing the game.
And I say this as a TO. So, I'm well aware of what needs to happen with regards to when you put your packs together. The other thing I do want to add at this point is the thought process behind Bolt Action when it was first written. Now, I obviously don't know what Alessio was thinking when he put the rules together, but I'm pretty confident he didn't write it thinking it's going to be a massively competitive game with a lot of events running. There may well have been an element of this game can transfer across to competitive play. And there's a very different, and it's slightly subtle, but there's a very big difference between the two. Your game that represents, Bolt Action isn't historical in the sense of other skirmish games are. It's what you call Hollywood war game in Hollywood World War II. It's quick, it's fast, it's fun. It's got some interesting mechanics in it in terms of the dice and that kind of thing. The rules aren't written to be incredibly tight, such that it ports across into a fully competitive environment, unlike other games.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of points there. So this is something we often hear, like, oh, Bolt Action wasn't intended as a competitive game, in inverted commas. And I think often we use this word competitive to mean something that the word doesn't literally mean, because Bolt Action is a competitive game, because competitive just means that you have a winner and a loser. And so by definition, it is. And I think when we're using the word competitive, what we mean is a very tight tournament game. Like chess, for example, has very strict rules. That means it's very easy to run a very tight, fair tournament. And I think often when we're talking about it and when we have discussions about Bolt Action and issues with the rules, often people use that as a defense where I think it's unfair as a defense because if the game worked at a tournament level, it also works at a low level. And there are some issues that do get highlighted as issues for tournament play, which actually do affect you in very casual narrative play. Because, so obviously, there I've been arguing very much, I've been arguing against your point. So I guess I'll raise the case for the prosecution now
Please
as
do,
why they
yeah.
are a problem. Because the reason the free units are a problem, or can be, is because of scale. So whereas something like the American Fire and Maneuver, you have that rule on your units regardless how big a game you play. And it sort of scales with the army. So if I have two squads, then I have two squads who can use Fire and Maneuver. If I have 10 squads, but equally, if I have 10 squads, you have an army that's five times bigger as well. So our armies scale nicely together. However, if you write all of your free unit rules for an intended sort of 1,000 point level, if we are starting to play the game and we're playing at 500 points, the Brits are getting a 20% increase in points, which the Americans aren't getting. So basically, our points limit is halved, but then the Brits get a boost on top. And so this is the problem I have with free units and why I don't think it's exclusively a problem for tournaments. I think the places where it's the biggest problem are, yes, at your tournament scene, because there is potential for it to be pushed to the nth degree and really sort of optimized. But I think it's also the other place it's the biggest problem. It's for beginners because they're the ones who will be playing the smaller games where your Brits are bringing 600 points to a 500 points battle, or the French potentially. The French, for example, could be bringing 700 points to that 500 points game, whereas the Americans still only have 500 points. And so that's why I think it's a problem. And I don't think it's just a problem in the context of tournaments. I think it's a broader issue.
So to quote the Untouchables, it's like bringing the knife to a gunfight.
It can be.
I absolutely recognize that, and this is something that as a TO I mitigated against. So I ran a 600 point league at my local club last year, and what I said was that no nation got a free unit. However, if a nation wanted to take a free unit, they had to pay 40% of what that unit was worth. And this was on the basis that the units are, generally speaking, your army is 1,000 points. So if you get a free unit, that's on the basis of you fielding a 1,000 point force. So by scaling it down to 600 points, what I said was the first 60% of that unit is free, but you've got to pay 40% of whatever the points, whatever that total points is. So if I was British and I wanted to take a free observer in my 600 point force, I allow people in the league to take it for 40 points. If I was a Soviet player and I had my 12 free man inexperienced squad, they had to pay 40% of whatever their total points were for a 12-man free Soviet squad if you tooled it up with all the anti-tank grenades and so on.
Yeah, and this is what we always say to tournament organisers, that if you're doing a small tournament, ban the free units because otherwise it will create imbalance. And yes, that is kind of a fix, but again, you should be able to play the game without having to modify the game. And that's why I think, hopefully, if we do see a new edition of Bolt Action at some point, I really hope they move away from these free units. Because equally, I've said why it's problematic in the favour of the armies with free units, but equally it can be a problem the other way. The lesser seen big games like 2,000, 3,000 points, that free observer isn't really making much difference. And so if your army's only national characteristic is free units, like the French, their only real perk is their free units. If you take them at 3,000 points, that doesn't really scale with the army. And so the Americans are going to have fire and maneuver on the whole force, but the French still only get their one free howitzer and their one free inexperienced squad. And so at 1,000 points, I think the free units probably aren't a huge problem. But if your game can only be played at a single level fairly, there's probably some imbalance there that could be addressed.
I guess it does again go back to what the intention was for the game. It's the basic building block for the game is a reinforced platoon. It's not a company level game, Bolt Action. It's a platoon level game. And then if you scale up to 2,000 or 3,000 points, yeah, okay, you're effectively adding maybe two or three platoons. At that point, yeah, you're talking about a company, but effectively it's a platoon level game.
Yeah, and I think that's probably a fair assessment that actually, I think if you filled every slot in your platoon, you're probably getting to that size of game where the French are at a disadvantage because they don't have any other sort of special rules that affect their squads naturally. But short of that, you're right, it probably is fairly balanced.
If I want to play a bigger scale game, I'm going to go and play Battle Group, for example, which is a much bigger level in terms of the number of the size of the force that I'm taking to the table than a platoon level skirmish game.
Yeah, and that's great, but as a games, so if we sort of shift our hat for a second from gamers to sort of like game manufacturers, I mean, if I'm writing a game, I would want people to be able to play it in as many possible ways as possible so that they stick with my system at all these different scales to ensure sort of their, and yes, obviously as a manufacturer, I would acknowledge that other companies exist and players probably are trying other companies, but I would certainly be doing everything I could to try and keep people playing my game as often as possible to sort of be spreading the word and bringing new players in. Like those new players who've got sort of 400 points of a force that they've just finished painting and they're just really excited to get on the table. You don't want them to walk into a battle where they're outnumbered.
Because somebody's taken, 200 points of free stuff.
Yeah. And it's not hard to do with the French because, like, the inexperienced army, especially full strength squads, isn't a hugely competitive build. When you see that at like at tournaments, people will be doing it either sort of minimum strength squads to maximize their dice count, or they'll be doing it with shirkers for cheapest possible options. You don't see many people running 12-man inexperienced squads, and so it's not a hugely powerful build. So if I'm building a French army as a new player, it shouldn't be an overpowered army. But if I'm getting an extra 120 points free of men plus my cannon, it is quite a powerful army at that points limit.
No, that's a fair point. I think there's another discussion, not for this episode, all about a game or game design mechanics and the extent to which you can take the basic core game mechanics, scale it down, from say a platoon level to a squad level, and scale it up from platoon to company.
Yeah. That is definitely a conversation. And the funny thing is with Bolt Action is actually, I think if we take away these free units, if let's say all the armies had flavoursome national characteristics that didn't involve getting free stuff, it would scale nicely, I think. Because actually, when we're playing 500 points, if we're both using forces that don't get free units, like let's say it's US against Germans, the 500 points game feels as balanced and as fun as the 1,000-point game. And it's only when we add this that it does highlight that actually bolt action is probably best around the 1,000 points, in my opinion.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've agreed
To disagree.
there are problems. No, I think we are agreeing there are issues, but we have different issues with the issue, if that makes
Yeah.
sense.
It feels like you don't see it as that big an issue because you mainly see bolt action sort of platoon level.
Yeah.
Whereas I think it would be great if it could be played at all scales without having to think too hard about the free units.
Yeah, maybe. I also think that it's not written for intense, you know. I'm using the word competitive in the way that we use it in bolt action, not competitive in the sense of two people playing a game and there is a winner.
Well, just tournament,
You know,
basically.
I think I don't have a problem with the free units. I think it reflects the national characteristics. If we can come up with some ideas in a moment where you still get that flavor of each nation without the free units, fantastic. I think the issue for me, or certainly what I read and hear and you know listen and talk to people about, is when it's played at that high level at tournaments, and there is an opportunity to, you know, maximize your list based on what you can and can't take.
Yeah. I think the great thing with bolt action as a tournament game is it has so much agency compared to other games. So if you look at, say, chess, there's a collection of sort of set opening plays because you're limited to those squares and those pieces. With bolt action, because there's so much choice in your units, there's so much choice because we're sort of where it's not a digital scale of movement where it's one square or two squares, you can move an analog amount, which means that you've got loads of options in where you place things, loads of options in how you play. And I think that makes it a great tournament game. And I actually think all that would need to happen to make it like a competitive tournament game, in inverted commas, would be to tighten up some of the vagueness in the rules, which unfortunately isn't helped often by the FAQ. And sort of just these national characteristics of free units are probably the main game mechanic that I see that does throw the game out of balance a bit when you push it to the nth degree.
The mechanics are a fair point. I used to play, as I'm going to show my age here now, I used to play a board game by Avalon Hill called Breakout Normandy, which, as you would imagine, was all about the initial invasion and breakout from Normandy. And there were certain, it was a hex-based game, and there were certain things you basically always did as the Allies. You basically set up the power of stomp in and around Saint-Mère-Église by the second or the third turn. Once you'd done that, depending on whether or not the Germans survived it, you then kind of like the game opened up. But if you didn't do that, you weren't going to get off the beaches and successfully establish your beachhead and then break out. Yeah, and again, it's like chess where there are certain ways, you know, you're always thinking four, five, six turns. There's certain things you do depending on how your opponent, you know, reacts or the opening moves, and you kind of know where it's going to go for the next period of time, and then it opens up and loosens up. Whereas bolt action loosens up, you know, other than the obvious, am I going to find my sniper? Am I going to start ranging in? It loosens up pretty quickly because of the random order dice.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's entirely loose from the get-go, I'd say. And I think we're veering into a whole different episode about is bolt action a good competitive game? But just briefly to summarize my thoughts, you aren't forced into any specific play. So there where you're saying, well, you might have to shoot your sniper. Well, not really, because, for example, I just don't take a sniper because I don't like that element of the game where if we both put our snipers down, my first order dice has to be my sniper. And so I can opt out of that part of the game without losing any competitiveness because I'm using those points elsewhere, giving me strength elsewhere. But I think it would probably be great to move into.
Okay, so having agreed there is an issue, albeit not agreed what the issue is, why don't we have a chat about how we might solve the issues?
Yes, absolutely, please, sir. You were saying if you could think of another rule that was thematic but meant we didn't have to have free units, you would go for it. Did you have any ideas for any of the armies that do get free units and what we could replace them with?
Yeah, so you take like the British, the reason why they get the free observer is to reflect their use of artillery and how good they were with regards to their artillery units. So rather than giving them that free observer, why don't you make the accuracy of the free observer better? So you've got to pay the points for it, but you're getting a bonus to it. Similar to, the Americans, where you get the air observer, you got to buy the air observer, but you get to use it twice in a game. You could have something with the artillery, the British observer, where you got to pay for it, but maybe you get to use it twice, or
Yeah.
there's more likelihood it comes in. So at the moment, it comes in on a 4, 5, or 6. Maybe it scatters on a 1. It's delayed on a 2, but it comes in on a 3, 4, 5, or 6. That might make people think, actually, I do want to spend 100 points on it because I'm going to build my army around dishing out a load of pins through my artillery observer, and then I'm going to charge in and do my assaults, for example.
Yeah, I think that would definitely work. Would it tempt me to take one? Probably not. But what you could also do, which might be a little bit more tempting for me personally, would be to give it the two dice when it's rolling against the units. So you're more likely to get that six. That might tempt me a little bit, but very much in the same theme that it's just representing that the Brits have good artillery support. I mean, the French also have good artillery. They have that sort of like the artillery support doctrine. And we could quite easily give them a similar sort of perk where either we could say that because they've got this artillery doctrine, they're good at range finding, and so they range in one better. So instead of starting on a six indirect, they would start on a five.
I see where you're going with that one, but that's the reason why the French get the free howitzer is because they had a load of static guns after World War One through the interwar period and the start of World War Two. It wasn't because they were particularly skillful at ranging in. The British were skillful in terms of their artillery. The French get it because they just got a ton of artillery pieces. The other thing with that as well is that you can take anti-tank guns if you get, currently you can take a free artillery piece, which isn't just a howitzer. It could be an anti-tank gun. Nobody does. You take the howitzer. So if your bonus was about ranging in, well, your anti-tank guns aren't going to range in because they're going to fire them direct.
Yeah, I mean, so first of all, generally, I mean, all of this is very much like cliche World War II, isn't it? And so, therefore, because the French have so many guns, being so well trained, you could probably make that sort of like broad strokes assessment. And it wasn't just sort of the quantity, it was the fact that they used the guns so close to the front is the other reason they get that rule.
That is true, actually.
Now, I don't know. So, the reason I suggested that they were well trained is because I couldn't think of another way to represent the fact that like they're used to having the guns so close to the front. Perhaps you could do something where sort of it boosts the morale of the troops, knowing that the guns are so close by. So if the troops have line of sight to the gun, they have plus one morale. And I mean, it is tricky, and I think this is why we have a lot of free units in bolt action, because it is easier just to say, well, this army has a lot of X, let's give them a free one.
Oh, to be a fly on the wall of the game designers when they were putting this together. Because I imagine they absolutely, you would go through this conversation, wouldn't you? If we do this, what's the knock-on effect? There isn't going to be a perfect solution. So what's the compromise we're willing to take? Or how, where's our line we're not going to cross? We'll get close to it, but we're not going to make a decision that will cross that line. We're going to have to live with though with the knock-on effects and consequences.
Yeah, and I think because the French don't have much else, I can imagine it was quite easy to justify. Well, they can have a free unit, it's not a big deal. On your anti-tank gun point, actually, I don't recall ever seeing someone take a free anti-tank gun for the French. And so
Just because they don't doesn't mean you can't.
I don't see a huge, I don't think the players would be hugely upset if you did replace the free unit with a bonus for range in. And actually, that would scale really nicely, and it would be something unique to the French. And it would be quite good. I mean, you've got to invest in that howitzer, but to range in on a five would be really good.
No, that would be good. Going back to what I said at the start, if we can find rules that reflect the character of the nation without giving the free unit, I'm all for that. I quite like the idea of that. I quite like the idea of the British artillery observer being better at coming in when it needs to without actually giving it to a player for free.
Yeah, the hurriedly conscripted force, hurriedly conscripted reserves rule. That one, it's interesting because it's not strictly free units. It's like a you buy three, you get one free special rule. And that one is an interesting one because, first of all, it's not as bad as the other ones, I think. It still can throw the whole game out of balance at those load points limits. But generally, it's not as bad because you've had to sort of invest 360 points to get 120 points free. So I still would like to get rid of that one. The bigger problem I have is, much like I imagine the reason it's there, I can't think of a great way to represent those conscripted reserves.
Because if you said that you got a points reduction if you bought three, you buy three inexperienced squads and actually you get a 25% discount. Well, that's effectively the same as giving you some free stuff, isn't
Yeah,
it?
exactly. It's the same thing. And the Soviets obviously have the same thing as well, where they get their free unit because quantity has a quality of its own. And it's tricky. Yeah, it's tricky to represent that without giving free units. It is one that I think I would, if I was writing the system now, I'd probably just avoid that generally. And I would represent that in the fact that you can have inexperienced shirker units because these conscripts don't really want to be there, some of them. And that would be the way that I'd represent the history there. I don't think there's a way to make it a national characteristic without doing it as a free unit. I mean, can you think of anything?
No, I can't. And I've been thinking about this as we've been preparing for this episode. And yeah, I am struggling. And yeah, probably that's why I've started from that position of I don't have a major issue with the free stuff if it's reflective of the flavor.
I mean, there are ways that I can think of to represent it in the narrative, in the rules. But the problem with all the ideas that I had is they're much like the Italian national characteristics where you're going to ruin someone's game because all of my ideas were negative. A bit like the Italians, where as soon as it appears you're losing, your army gets worse. But of course, as soon as you add something like that, it makes the game less fun for anyone who chooses to play as that nation, I think. I mean, one of the things with the French that I think isn't represented very nicely, or isn't represented as well as it could be in the rules, is their armored doctrine. So when the Germans invaded, the problem from an armored perspective wasn't that the French tanks were rubbish or that they didn't have any. It was that their doctrine was that the armor was there to support the infantry. And so when you have an armored column coming up against infantry with like one tank supporting them, you're in trouble. And I think this armored doctrine isn't really represented. So again, you could, if you just scrapped conscription as your national characteristic, you could give them something, like I said earlier, where if your infantry can see the tank, they have plus one morale as though they're within 6 inches of your lieutenant. And that adds a bit of flavor without adding free units.
No, that's cool. I like that.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
I do try my hardest.
Good. I can give you compliments as well.
Too kind. Yeah, I mean the Belgians the Belgians have a similar hurriedly, in fact I think they've got the exact same rule, hurriedly conscripted reserves. And now they're tricky because Belgium didn't fight in the war for a long time, so we don't have a lot of history, sort of World War II history to draw on in terms of the actual duration of the fight. But they could have something a bit tasty like the Polish, who they have the no hope of retreat rule where they get to re-roll morale checks because where are they gonna go? And so the Belgians could have something similar.
Although the Belgians did retreat because they
Yeah.
went back to Dunkirk and escaped that way, didn't they? But anyway, carry on.
So in that case, you could give them something like a recce move when charged because they're in retreat. I don't know, to be honest. I just think the other thing I like about not giving free units is I think national characteristics that give a special rule, make the army more interesting to play and more unique to play. Whereas if we both just have armies that get free units, generally it's like playing the same army against each other because you don't
True.
have, like playing against Americans feels very different to playing against Germans, doesn't it? But playing against French and playing against Belgians can often feel quite similar.
True.
Did you have any other ideas, Phil? No? Well, who else gets free units?
So not so much free units, but incredibly beneficial characteristics that normally you'd pay for.
Go on. Who are you thinking of?
I'm obviously talking about Japan here. Because as soon as you slap down Fnatic on your Japanese units, cost of normally plus 3 points per men, they are getting a massive, massive boost. But I absolutely think it is appropriate given the style and the tenacity and the no retreat that Japanese forces displayed in the Second World War.
Yeah. And to be honest, because that one is a bit like the conscription rule where you had to buy the squad to get the free stuff, and the more you buy, the more free stuff you get. I didn't think it was that much of a problem in the game until that FAQ where they just broke Fnatic. That FAQ where they changed Fnatic to make you impervious to flamethrowers, so you don't have to do the morale check when hit by a flamethrower, meant that the Japanese got a huge boost, because Fnatic got a huge boost. The Japanese are getting for free. And my biggest problem with the entire thing was, if you want to play... So going back to that entire conversation about tournament play versus narrative play, if you want to play a very narrative campaign where you have the Japanese holding out on an island while the Marines try to clear the island, you're going to need to put flamethrowers on those Marines, because that's what they did. They had, I think they gave the Marines something like 7 flamethrowers per platoon.
Right.
To go and clear those caves, clear the bunkers.
Yeah, yeah.
And so if you build a Marine force with flamethrowers on foot to go and clear the Japanese out, they can't touch them now, because you Japanese take this inexperienced conscripted horde that's sort of been planted on the island to defend it.
Yeah.
And your flamethrower comes up, kills 3 men, 3.5 on average, I think it is. Well, there's 12 other men who are now charging that engineer squad. And again, sort of thematically, that squad with the flamethrower is going to be sort of 5 men. And then you're going to have another squad with the BAR who are covering their advance. So that 5-man squad's just quite easily going to get wiped by the Japanese in close quarters. Even if they're sort of equal size, the Japanese are just going to wear them down again because of that Fnatic rule. And that part where the Japanese are great in combat is super thematic and not overpowerful. But when you make them impervious to flamethrowers, then it's broken that narrative, hasn't it?
So I would say that's not an issue with the army special rules. It's an issue that's been created through what, to be fair, was an answer to an FAQ rather than an errata.
Yeah, exactly. So they've, and this is one of the problems I have. Again, this is another episode in its own right, I think, for the future. But one of the problems I have with Warlord's FAQ is they change the rules in answer to a question quite often. And that isn't an FAQ. That's exactly as you say, it's an errata. So do you say errata?
I say errata. Do you say errata?
I think I say errata.
Okay.
I think it is errata, though.
Potato or potato?
Tomato, tomato. Mm-hmm. Let's call the whole thing off.
Thank you very much for listening. Ta-ta for now.
Ta-ta forever. Right, how do we get back on track to...
What about free fortifications, Johnny?
Well, it's interesting because they can add some theme.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking sort of Luftwaffe Field Division. Was it LDF? I'm thinking LDF.
Yeah.
Fortress
Budapest, Romanians. Is it Romanians, Hungarians? What were they?
Thinking of the Pocket Defenders.
Pocket Defenders would be another one.
Yeah, because they're sort of fortifying the area. The Italians get free obstacles as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm counting them as fortifications in this.
Yeah, yeah.
Generally, I don't like it, if I'm honest.
Okay.
Similar to what I've said previously about this sort of stuff, where I think in a campaign where you know it's coming and you've set up the table in a way where using those obstacles isn't going to make the table horrible to play on, it's probably fine. Because then also, if you're doing a narrative game and you realize that those obstacles have broken the table, it's not a problem, because you just sort of call it off within the first 5-10 minutes and go, never mind, let's quickly reshuffle things so that there's actually more than just one avenue to get across the table.
Mm.
So we've still got a little bit of agency and it's still a good game. It does mean, however, if you start giving people free obstacles and fortifications, it does allow for the game to get a little bit unbalanced and unplayable at times. It's what I think.
We played, didn't we, recently an event in a tournament, which was a theatre-only event, and it was put on effectively for a lot of us to practice for the Welsh Open. And I obviously took my free French, and I don't have any tracked vehicles in that force. It's all wheeled vehicles. And had I played a particular person who had brought one of the new selectors from Tufka and paid for their fortifications, had I played them in the mission, which was double envelopment, I was going to be up against it, to say the least, because they could have just put a load of barbed wire across the table. And because I had wheeled vehicles rather than track, there was no way I was getting across it without having to spend a turn with my infantry unit going down, clearing the barbed wire and so on. So, yeah, you can build a really balanced table as a TO, and then you add in the additional extras that come from your theatre selector, your LDF force, your Italians, and that can ruin the table, particularly for a certain mission as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the fortifications will probably be a topic of an entire episode at some point, because I'm not sure I like the way that fortifications are taking the game at the minute. I don't think we need to dwell too long on them, though, because the only generic army we see with them are Italians, and they need a complete rewrite, regardless of the fortifications element. And so I don't think, in generic play, I don't think the fortifications and obstacles are a huge problem, especially because actually the attacker defender missions, where the Italians actually get their obstacles, they're not as commonly played as the non-attacker defender missions, are they?
No, that's right. Yeah, most, you know, a lot of the missions you see don't have that attacker defender defined beyond who sets up first and who puts their units in reserve first and all that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, I think we've covered some ideas for most of the free units. I imagine there's some we've sort of missed in the backwater. Some are repeats, like the Romanians get the same as the French, so you could use similar ideas or find some other unique element of their sort of national history to write a new special rule from. But I think we've covered enough that there's some nice ideas out there, and hopefully we'll see them implemented in the future rather than the free units. Equally, I imagine this is probably going to be our most controversial episode to date, because I imagine there's some people who are very much in disagreement with most of certainly what I've said, potentially what you've said as well.
Yeah, I'd imagine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Minor point, we haven't discussed the Soviets.
Well, we did say it was when we talked about the French conscription, and we talked about like how difficult it was to represent the conscription without giving free units. The problem is, I don't know what the Soviets. Oh, I mean, you could probably just remove them from the Soviets, couldn't you? Because they have enough other good stuff, don't they?
Yeah, but if you were to think about, if you were to ask a layman who didn't play Bolt Action, what can you tell me about the Soviets in World War II? They'd go, they had a ton of blokes who didn't have a lot of armament between them.
I tell you what, actually, the unarmed men is flavoursome of that, in the same way I was saying about the fact that if you could take inexperienced shirkers, that's representative of conscripts. I think the ability to take unarmed men is representative of that Soviet quantity as a quality of its own, where you're throwing men into action without arms.
I mean, they've got arms, but they haven't got weapons. Just to clarify. Sorry.
Yeah, so I actually don't think the Soviets are strong enough army that I don't think they actually need the free unit. And also, I think that idea is represented elsewhere. And as a game designer, I think all you need to do is just make it more explicit that the reason they get to take unarmed men is for that thematic historical reason. And that nicely represents it without giving them the free squad.
What about for the armies like, say, the French, where you've got your free and experienced squad if you buy three, your Soviets, where you get your free one as part of your special rules? What if you allowed them to take an additional unit at cost beyond what you would normally have in a generic platoon? So your generic platoon has got your two compulsory squads and your officer, and then 0 to 3 additional squads. What if, to reflect, for example, with the Soviets, where you've got a mass of troops, you go, actually, you can take an additional unit, but it's got to be an inexperienced squad.
Yeah, love it. Yes, I wish I'd thought of it myself, because that's such a good idea.
Thank you.
And so you say, yeah, I think that's amazing. So you say your compulsory is your officer, two squads of choice. Your optional is three squads of choice, and then you get a 0 to 1 conscription squad or inexperienced squad, and you would make it that squad that can have unarmed men for the Soviets, wouldn't you? Yeah, no, I think that's brilliant. I think that is exactly how you solve it. Because you're paying points for it, I imagine a lot of people will think that isn't a big advantage. But if you're playing a game where you've agreed to limit yourselves to single platoon, having one extra infantry squad who can just stand at the back on an objective, even if they do nothing else in the game, it's freed up troops to go elsewhere to go and clear some other objectives.
Exactly, yeah.
And so, yeah, brilliant.
As we know, I play a lot of vet heavy armies, and there's often a point in the game in turn 4, 5, 6 where I'm like, I've kind of run out of squads. If it's not going very well for me, and I've lost, and if I'm only taking 4 infantry squads because I've got 4 vets, for example, I really could do with that additional squad somewhere around the back to sit on an objective or to dash into that sector that's going to score me or to run into the deployment zone for my opponent if I'm playing double envelopment, whatever it is. So the ability to take that additional dice with that additional load of bodies actually can be really beneficial without giving it away for free.
Yeah, so any army that has hurriedly conscripted reserves or similar, give them a f one extra option to take in an experienced squad. I'm 100% for that, because that is solves the problem, huge benefit, amazing. I'm in. Sign me up.
If we see this in what may or may not be coming around soon in terms of version 3, you heard it here first.
If version 3 is released in 3 years' time,
yeah,
we're claiming credit. If it's released in 3 days' time, maybe we didn't come up with it first.
Maybe not, to be fair.
That was really good.
Thank you.
That was, yeah, well played, sir.
Cheers.
The thing with that one that's really interesting is I think there are a lot of people who would think that is rubbish.
Mm.
But actually, I personally think that that is really powerful, especially with World Open War coming up, because that's one of the things that I was looking at a lot with World Open War, where, because that's single platoon, how do I get six squads? Because at some point, I'm going to be throwing my men at them, and I just need one squad to hang back, don't I?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We sort of talked about it when we looked at the Bulge Free French.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I said with the FFI squad,
mm-hmm.
you can take it, let me read the actual wording.
Oh, yeah, because that's what you did at last Welsh Open, didn't you? You snuck in an extra squad of FFI.
So the FFI unit may be added as an additional infantry squad section. So if I've only got five options and I can chuck in a six, that's actually pretty powerful. Yeah.
Yeah, quality.
Which is basically what I did, yeah.
It worked?
It didn't work. No, it didn't work. I still finished, you know, roughly 50-50, but I had fun. That's what matters.
But you don't have a control to compare against, because if you hadn't had that squad, you might have ended in the bottom five players.
That is true, yeah.
And until you build that time machine and go and play it again, we'll never know.
And we change a little factor here and there each time, yeah.
Oh, that's true, actually. You would have to control for everything else. So we'd also have to wipe your memory up until that point.
It's not going to happen, is it?
Nah, I think we just call the whole thing off.
Yeah.
Right.
Ta-ta forever.
Well, this is probably quite a controversial one. I think if you agree or disagree with us, please do send us a message. We always reply to our Facebook messages, for example. You could also follow us on there, or even just do a post on our Facebook page. We've probably thrown out enough solutions, even if we haven't touched every single army who gets free units. And actually, I think there were some really good ideas in there that I'm hoping to see in future editions.
I'd be really interested to hear what other people think, to be fair.
Yeah. I imagine we're not alone in thinking that free units are a problem, because there are so many tournament packs at 500 points where the free units are banned. Which does show that, obviously, other people are acknowledging they're an issue. And so I imagine there probably are quite a few people who do agree with us. Maybe it's not to the extent that I think it's a problem. And they think, yeah, it's a bit of a problem, but I can live with it. And so, yeah, please do reach out if you've got any thoughts on this, or if you've got any thoughts for future episodes you'd like to hear us talk about. Also, please do leave us a review on your podcast player of choice.
And please continue to like, share, and subscribe.
Ta-ta for now.
Ta-ta for now.